I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Today, we are joined by Ashley Sire as part of our Going Solo series about lawyers who have made the leap and opened their own law firm. Ashley is a lawyer, mediator, and founder of Sire Law, Gastown Mediation, and the Lawyer Incubator. The Lawyer Incubator is the first project of its kind in Canada, where Ashley provides mentorship and support to lawyers starting their solo practices. We couldn't think of a better fit for our Going Solo series. So thanks so much for joining us today, Ashley.
Thanks for having me.
And this series could also be entitled Lawyers That Helped Erin Go Solo. So they'll help you go solo too, because Ashley was also an excellent help to me when I was going solo. And this lawyer, I'm so excited to hear more about the Lawyer Incubator and all the projects that you've been up to, because it's really neat to see that other people are going to get some advice from you as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the hope anyhow.
So we like to always just start off by getting to know a bit more about how your career has sort of evolved over time and what led you to where you are now.
Yeah, I've had an interesting path in law. I think that's a fair way to say it. I went to law school at UBC. It wasn't Allard Hall then, but it is now. So I think I'm technically allowed to say that's where I went. I got my first summer article job in a rather unusual way. I was waiting tables and served the managing partner of a boutique litigation firm who had a lot to drink and then offered me a job. And so I called him on the Monday morning to ask if he remembered offering me a job, and he did. So that's how I got my first law firm job. And then I was a summer student, an articled student, and an associate there. And it was one of those places that, as somebody who didn't come from a line of lawyers, I came from a line of teachers, so I didn't know anything at all about the practice of law or what it was like to be inside a law firm even. So I thought I had hit the jackpot. I thought I had found this perfect place where I was going to be an associate, and then I was going to be a partner, and then this is where I was going to spend my career, and it was going to be awesome. And it wasn't awesome. My personal life kind of went off the rails in a pretty tragic way right at the beginning of my profession. I was called to the bar in May of 2010. And in October of 2010, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And 7 months later, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And that's an awful thing to go through at any stage of life. It's a particularly challenging thing to go through right at the very beginning of your career. And this amazing firm that I thought I was going to spend my whole career at ended up not being the most supportive place. And as a result, I got fired over drinks on a Friday on the patio of the Cactus Club in Yale Town. And then did the thing that happens in movies where I ordered another bottle of wine, got really drunk, and told the managing partner exactly what I thought of him and his firm and the way he ran it, told him never to hire another female associate. I'm not really sure if he ever followed that advice or not, because I didn't exactly keep in touch. But there I was, from thinking I'd, you know, hit the law firm jackpot to, oh my God, what do I do now? And going through what I was going through at the time with my mom and dad both being sick didn't exactly lend itself to going and finding another job. So I did a bit of contract work for other lawyers, little bits and pieces and things here and there. And then after they passed, I thought, right, I'm gonna try again. I'm gonna try this law firm thing again. And I went to another firm. And I thought, okay, maybe this will be the right fit. It's a little bit different, but it's still small. I hope I'm in the right place. And it also wasn't the right place for a bunch of reasons. And I was feeling really disheartened. So at that point, I would have been about a 3 or 4 year call, give or take. And I was trying to figure out if I should just leave law or, you know, pick a different profession entirely. And I thought, maybe I'll go in-house. And so I interviewed for a job for about 4 months, long interview process. And through that interview process, I ended up the second choice out of a bunch of people, but there was only one job. So being the second choice wasn't super helpful to me. And I asked at the end why I didn't get the job, why someone else and not me. And I thought I'd get this stock sort of, oh, that person had more experience than you kind of answer. But I did. The answer I got was, well, you took a year off and you were never really properly mentored. And it was a surprisingly honest answer. One I really wasn't expecting. And I took a lot of that comment to heart. It was surprising in a way, but also completely unsurprising. And I thought, well, if this is what I'm going to be bumping up against in law, you know, you took a year off because your parents were both dying, let's call it what it is, and you never really had good mentorship. Well, okay, I don't know how to go get that. And lucky for me, the same week I got that rejection, I got a call from a law school classmate of mine. And I have told Mike this, and I will say it again, Mike McCubbin is the reason I still practice law. And I thank Mike every time I'm enjoying my job. And I curse him when I'm not, but that's mostly a joke. He had an office and was joining a space with a couple other lawyers. There was going to be a spare office. And he asked if I wanted it. Now, I had never wanted to be a sole practitioner. I had wanted to join a little firm and be a partner and have an awesome, cool, you know, office with this great little firm. It had never occurred to me to go out on my own. I didn't particularly like the idea of going out on my own. I didn't really consider myself to be an entrepreneur. I realize now that I am. And that I probably always was and just didn't know it. That was kind of a cool thing to figure out. So I said yes to this offer of an office, despite all the parts of me that were screaming, no, this is a terrible idea. You don't know what you're doing. But I did it anyway. And I said I'd give it a year. And at the end of the year, I had some clients and I'd helped some people. And I was doing okay. And I was feeling like I was in a more supportive environment with these other three sole practitioners than I had ever been in either of the firms that I'd been. And that was a really eye-opening thing, that you could be a sole practitioner and feel more supported than when you're not. So that's how I got here, starting my own thing. That was the beginning. I guess that you could call that the origin story of Sire Law.
Wow. Ashley, no one can hear that story and not be a little speechless. I know it was like a decade ago now when you lost your parents, but that grief like never gets easier. And I'm so sorry that you went through that and also weren't met with the necessary supports or any type of empathy where you were working at the time. It's so clear that all of those events led you to all of these projects and roles that you have now. How, like, you clearly wear many hats as like a lawyer, a mediator, like you have a law practice, you have a mediation practice, and then you have the lawyer incubator. How do you sort of fulfill these roles on a daily basis? And I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, what is the day to day? Like, when are you Ashley the lawyer? When are you Ashley the mediator? And when are you Ashley mentoring all these sole practitioners? We'd love to hear a bit about that.
Yeah, it's, I sometimes do describe myself as a woman of many hats. Sometimes the hats kind of pile on top of each other and I feel like I'm wearing them all at the same time, which can be a bit of a challenging balancing act. I suppose I'm Ashley lawyer generally most of the day. I'm Ashley mediator whenever somebody decides that they want me to be, and I would love to be Ashley mediator more. So anybody who's listening and who has mediations that they're like, oh, maybe I should schedule, call me. I'd love to do it. Because I feel like the mediation part of what I do, even when I'm not wearing my official mediator hat and mediating, I feel like it's what I'm doing a lot of the time anyway in all the different roles. You know, you can use those skills as the lawyer, and you can also use them in your, you know, I'm fortunate I don't have a lot of conflict within my office space. You know, there's not a lot of conflict within my workplace. So it's not like I'm mediating at work. But there are some of those skills that just come in handy. You know, as for the day-to-day of what Ashley the mentor is, the lawyer incubator is just getting going. So I'm hoping soon to have a whole bunch of new solo practitioners and junior lawyers who are joining me, and I'm mentoring more on a daily basis. But just to give you an example, one of the lawyers in my office today, who's been in my space for about 3 years now and has been practicing for maybe 5 years now, said, look, I've got this really weird situation, and do you have a few minutes to talk it through? I'm just not quite sure what to do here, and I could really use your thoughts. And so we sat down for about 10 minutes and we talked it through, and he explained what was weird about the situation, and I asked some questions. And at the end of that, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, he's like, I think I know where to go from here. And so that's what the day-to-day mentoring part of it looks like for me. And I love that I get to do it within my office. Now, I also get the phone calls or the video chat requests or the coffee requests from lawyers all over the place. And I'm always happy to take those too, but it's so nice to have it, you know, not knock on your door frame. My door is usually open, except right now, because I'm trying to be quiet. You know, to have that person come and say, hey, have you got 5 minutes? Can we talk this over? It's the thing that I loved the most about that office situation that I had when I first started out. That feeling of feeling like you're supported, even though you're a solo. And that's the thing that I'm trying to give. It goes back to when I was told I didn't get that job because I was never mentored properly. And, you know, I don't know what proper mentorship looks like. I didn't have it. And I know what was helpful for me when I finally got it. And that's the thing I'm trying to give.
Ashley, for those listening who maybe don't know exactly what the lawyer incubator is, and I know you've just like described what you do, but how would you describe it to someone who is thinking, oh, I need this thing, or what is this great sounding thing? How would you like describe it to someone in that way?
Yeah. So the lawyer incubator is intended to be a place where you can come start your own firm and have the supports to help you build it successfully and build it in a way that functions for you right from the beginning. So I have this great space in Gastown, and we've got office space available and desks available. And it's the idea is that lawyers who are wanting to start their own practice can come and be in the space. We're working on some really exciting partnerships. Actually, yesterday I just got confirmed a partnership with Clio. So Clio is going to be providing a year subscription to their Clio management program for all the incubator lawyers. So they're going to have that practice management support. They're going to have this open door mentorship support. They're going to have some structured mentorship. And that will look different for different people depending on what they need. It'll either be weekly check-ins about files or open door check-ins when they need them, or whatever it is that's going to help them build this practice properly. It's going to give them the supports that they need in order to feel like they know what they're doing as they're building up their client base and they're building up that practice. So eventually they can take that practice to whatever space they want to be in. As much as I'd love everybody to stay forever, I really want them to do well enough that they can leave and make space for the next person.
Yeah, I love this idea. And I wish that there was a lawyer incubator on the side of the coast, but maybe, you never know, the lawyer incubator will soon become coast to coast. But I just love this idea, especially with the sort of open door policy and mentorship, because as a solo that's just been doing solo work during the pandemic, although you can just send a text message or an email, it's just so impersonal sometimes. And, you know, I'm always checking the clock, especially if I'm messaging someone in a different time zone, just think, okay, well, can I still message them? Would they still be working right now? Are they going to be bothered to get this? Cause it's like 6 PM, but like maybe their workday ended at 5 and they just want to be sitting on the couch relaxing and they don't want a like logistical question from a junior lawyer. But having like a space where you can go and physically see people, I think would be really helpful. So even though you're doing it on your own, you have those supports and like built-in network. And I think that's really, really powerful and helpful.
Yeah, you know, that peer support becomes really important too. Having other people who have their doors open that you can go and chat with and bounce ideas off and run things past. And I do think that there's something to be said for the structure of, you know, whatever the structure looks like for you, having one, knowing that it's going to be once a week or every 2 weeks or the third Friday of every month or whatever you pick, but having some kind of structured check-in, I think is really helpful and really important. And, you know, it's one of those things that even if you can't be here in the space or in a space like this, you can still at least set that up. So you know you've got that someone to interface with. I was really excited. Actually, the first person who I think is going to be signing up for the incubator lives in Australia, but is looking for mentorship. And it's neat. I mean, it's one of the things that the pandemic has actually given us is a better ability to make those long distance connections and have them not feel so far away.
That's so cool. Hopefully, I don't know. I was going to say, hopefully you can go there and visit sometime, but I don't know why you would have to go visit a participant in the incubator. I just think going to Australia would be really cool.
Any
excuse. I was like, hey, connection to Australia. Hopefully you can go soon.
It's one of only two continents I have left. I only have two left. So,
okay. I wasn't planning on asking this question, but has that affected your career at all? Like being a solo and traveling, it kind of sounds like you like to travel. So has that impacted your practice and the way that you practice?
Yeah. I mean, travel is important to me. I have loved to travel ever since I did an exchange when I was in law school. I didn't know that I loved to travel the way that I do until then. I found out by accident and it was a wonderful accident. But actually, one of the things that I love about running my own practice is I get to set the boundaries and I get to take the time off if and when I want to. And so I have actually had the ability to travel and do it when I want to, as long as I don't have court or tribunal or other obligations and I have a gap in my calendar, I can go. I'm fortunate that I don't have the kind of practice where my clients have life and death situations and urgent things that I can actually do something about most of the time. So when I'm away, I'm away. Boundaries, I think, are really, really important. So for me, if I'm going to travel, I want to travel and actually get away and enjoy it. Just to give you an example, a few years ago, I decided to go to Peru and I spent a week on a riverboat in the Amazon and there was no Wi-Fi or cell signals or anything like that. It was off the grid. And it was, first of all, it was glorious. And secondly, my practice didn't fall apart. Nobody died. Everything was fine. Maybe I missed a new client consult or two, but I'm sure they found somebody else. So everything was okay. And it was a really great lesson to learn that everything is going to be okay if you step away or if you set a boundary or if you say, no, I'm not going to be available to you all the time.
So Ashley, that literally has been one of the questions I've been dying to ask you. And something like Erin and I both run businesses and we are constantly saying to each other way too late at night, get off your computer, or like, this is a time you need to get outside. And we're trying to remind each other to set those boundaries that you're discussing. And so we are curious, you've already touched on a bit, but we're hoping you can go into it a bit more. How do you separate yourself from your business, and how do you create and then also enforce, which is part of our problem, how do you enforce those boundaries?
Yeah, I think a lot of the enforcing of the boundaries is willpower and stubbornness, frankly. Setting the boundaries is the part that's very individual. You know, for me, work is at the office and home is at home. I do my best not to bring too much home to the office, and I almost never bring work home. I'm one of those rare folks who's had the ability to and also the desire to keep going to the office through the whole pandemic. It's one of the benefits of not having a whole lot of other people working in my space. But, you know, I only bring work home if I have court the next morning and I need to keep prepping, or in very unusual circumstances where I know that there's some kind of time sensitive thing and I'm going to have to respond. Otherwise, once I'm home, I'm not looking at work anything. And on the weekends, unless I know that there's something urgent coming up, I'm not looking at work anything. I'm not going to be one of those people who's at the ski hill and checking my work email on the chairlift up. That's just something that for me was really important. And you know, a lot of that came from the perspective that I got early in my career. I mean, losing both my parents, who were both in their 60s, was pretty eye-opening for me because they were young, they were healthy, they were active, they were all the things that you should be and all the things that we all try to be, but it didn't matter. You know, life doesn't usually give you a whole lot of heads up when your number's up. And I don't think anybody has got to the end of their life and thought, gee, I wish I worked more. I think most people who feel like their time is being cut short think, gee, I wish I'd spent more time with my friends or my family, or I wish I'd traveled more or seen this thing I really wanted to see or tried this thing I really wanted to do. And so for me, making sure that I'm prioritizing those things has been a real driver for me. Having a life outside of my office. I have a lovely office with a nice view and a pretty brick wall, but I still don't want to be here all the time.
Yes, we can attest it is a very pretty brick wall. But that is a great reminder that even as beautiful as your office may be, you don't need to spend all of your days in it. But you've kind of touched on it a bit, but how do you take care of your mental health? And as a solo, how have you found health insurance that adequately supports you? Because I know that was like a big concern for me when I was going out on my own was, okay, so I used to have it through my employer. Now what?
And yeah, that's actually, it's a great question. It is one of the first things that I went and looked at when I went out on my own. I just sort of checked through what looked like it was available to me online, picked the plan that looked the best and got it. But I do think getting it is important. And then as to the question about the supports, you know, every law society, and I'm sure that your listeners are coast to coast. I mean, I know what BC has. I don't know what there is everywhere else, but there are going to be programs, I think, through most law societies across the country that are available to you if you need certain kinds of supports, you know. And so talking about looking after your mental health, you know, I do things that work for me, which include talking things through with friends and colleagues, debriefing about really challenging cases or mediations or client calls or things like that. But also journaling, because I find for me, that's a big one. It lets me work through things that are going on and figure out how I'm feeling about them. Because sometimes I sit down and I really have no idea what's about to come out my pen. And then I get, you know, 8 pages later and think, huh, I didn't realize I felt that way about that thing. So that's been a really helpful one for me. But one of the things that is super important for me in looking after my mental health, and it's different for everyone, but this one I would suspect will be the same for everyone, is finding those things outside of work that bring you joy and that allow you to escape in a fun and different kind of way. And so for some people, that's reading books. For some, it's writing. For some, it's photography. That's one of mine. Or travel, or cooking great food, or baking, you know, whatever your thing is, and making time for it. So one of the things that I've done since I was 7 years old is community theater. And I still make time for it. I still do shows. Even through the pandemic, I managed to do a show outside on a floating stage the 2 days out of the entire summer that had terrible weather. But it was worth it. It was great. But finding those outlets, you know, whatever your outlet is, and really making it a priority. I think some of us do a great job of prioritizing certain work things. Sometimes we prioritize our personal relationships, our friendships, or our family relationships. But I think a lot of us lose those other outlets that make us as we get deeper into our careers. And I would encourage anybody listening to remember that thing that you used to do that used to bring you so much joy and go do it.
So this is no longer Off the Tracks podcast. It's the Off-Broadway podcast with Pepper, Aaron, and Ashley.
Even know if I can be on the podcast. Well, okay. My small high school career could be on it. Okay.
You can do jazz hands. If you can do jazz hands, you can do it.
I can do jazz hands. I can do jazz hands. Okay, I can stay. Thanks.
Ashley, honestly, all I want to talk to you now about is community theater and Broadway. And I had known from reading a bit about you before we met that that was one of your interests and one of mine as well. And just before I dive into that, you were talking about the mental health supports available through the Law Society. And for anyone listening, in every episode of Off the Tracks from the very beginning, we have a link that takes you to the supports available to you in your province in the notes of every episode. So if you're listening now and you're thinking that you want mental health support, you can access it through your applicable Law Society just by going exactly where you are, which is in the episode notes of this podcast. But Ashley, okay, first of all, what show did you do in community theater during the pandemic? I must know.
It was a very small show. It was actually part of a thing called the Flagstock Festival in Whistler. So it was about a 25-minute one-act play on this floating stage. So it was the Flagstock Festival, but yeah, this little one-act. It was good fun. It was three characters. The entire show took place in a series of phone calls. And the premise of it was two women in a beauty salon in 1950-ish had walked off with each other's raincoats. And it was the battle of trying to get them back and who should have to be inconvenienced to return them. And the poor salon keeper in the middle of it all. It was hilarious and fun.
That sounds so fun. I love your attitude about pursuing passions outside of work and doing the things that brought you so much joy as a kid or throughout your life. I think like when I was in third year law, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, so I won't get crazy into it. But when I was in third year, I auditioned and got a part in a community theater production of Hairspray, the musical. And but my attitude at the time when I auditioned and took voice lessons for the first time in many years, because it sort of all fallen to the wayside throughout law school and university. When I signed up for the voice lessons and I auditioned for the musical, my perspective was, okay, this is my last chance to do something like this ever for the rest of my life. I have to do it now because I'm never, ever, ever going to get to do it again. And I mean, I haven't had the chance to do it again because we've been in a pandemic, but now my perspective is like, that didn't have to be the last time. If I wanted to go do community theater again, I could do community theater again or voice lessons or whatever it might be like outside of work, because just because now I practice, those passions don't have to go and die. So I really appreciate your like mindset shift and like perspective shift. Because I think that's helpful for people regardless of what their passion is and whatever brings them joy. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to drop your practice and take a month off and go rehearse for a play. Like you can, I've done that. I'm not totally sure I'd recommend it, but I don't regret doing it, even though it was for a silly Fringe Festival musical that was, again, delightful and fun. But you can do those little things, you know, like what you were just saying, Piper, you can go take a voice lesson just because you want to. You know, you can, if you're into photography, like dust off your camera, go take a picture of something, spend an hour editing it and make it neat. You know, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be a giant, colossal undertaking. It can be something little, but just something that helps you retain as much of that piece of yourself as you want to hang on to.
No, absolutely.
I was going to jump in real quick, Piper, because I was just going to say that's one thing I've been trying to do. And as Piper was talking about earlier in this episode, we're trying to encourage each other to like get off the computer and stop working at night. And so I'm trying to like put together a list of things that I like to do in the evening so that it sounds more enticing, because when you just have like an evening of nothingness ahead and you're like, okay, I could like knock these things off my list, that sounds really enticing and like fulfilling because you can like take things off your list. Instead, I like want to have a list of like, what are fun things besides like watching the latest TV show, which I'll probably do anyways, no matter if I stay up late. What are some other things I can do to fill my evening? And I think that's a really great reminder that it doesn't have to be like a big, like jump back into a passion. It's like dust something off out of your closet, or I have a paint by numbers I started like at the beginning of the pandemic that I have not touched in a year. So, you know, like baby steps, like what can I do in the evening?
I should finish that.
Yeah, I really should. I did enjoy it. I used to love doing that, but I don't know what happened. Like, it got put in the closet. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it was probably out of sight, out of mind. And so I bet if you bring it out.
That's true. It is out of sight and out of mind. That's true.
So Ashley, I have so many questions, but I'll spare the listeners and we'll save it for after the recording. There's no real good way to segue to this question, but Erin and I really wanted to ask you because we found that your pre-interview answer was just like really compelling and frankly, like not what we necessarily like ever expected to hear from anyone. And so we're really curious if you could tell people a bit about how you handle the financial side of your business.
Now I'm trying to remember what I answered.
We talked a bit about the honor system and we'd love to hear more about that.
Right. Yeah. So I don't take retainers from most of my clients. I get most of them to sign retainer agreements, which we should always do. And I do my best to always do it. But yeah, so one of the things that I started doing, and it really started because I didn't want to have a trust account. And now I do, but I still practice this way. I try to only take clients who I trust will pay my bills. And they trust me to do the work for them and to do it well and to help them with the thing they need help with. And I trust them to pay me for it. And it seems kind of elementary, but it really is a bit of the honor system. You know, if I get a client and I think I'm going to have a hard time at the end of all of this getting them to pay me, then I'm not going to take that client. Rather than saying, okay, well, I'll do it if you give me a retainer of X dollars, I'd rather just not take that client. and spend my time on somebody that I feel like I can help, who needs the help and who's going to appreciate the help. You know, I think of it in the way that I ask my accountant to do my accounting work for me, and then he does it and he sends me a bill and then I pay him for it. And I really like that, because a lot of the clients that I help are not necessarily particularly well off. Some of them are, a lot of them aren't. And a lot of the work that I do for those clients is a one-off consultation or a little bit of unbundled work or some specific task. And so rather than saying to those people, okay, well, my standard retainer is $2,000 or $5,000 or $1,000, you know, whatever your number is, I say to them, okay, well, here's what my hourly rate is. I'm going to get you to sign this retainer agreement. I'm going to give you a bill after I've done the thing or once a month, and I'm going to expect you to pay it. If you don't pay it, I'm going to ask you for a retainer. And I've almost never had to ask for the retainer. It's only happened, you know, in my now 8 years of solo practice, I think I can still count on both hands the number of times it's happened, maybe even on one hand. And it's not a way of practicing that a lot of people are going to agree with, probably. It's not necessarily going to work for everybody, but I just like that trust factor. You know, lawyers are trusted advisors. That's that, when it all comes down to it, that's what we do. That's who we are to our clients. And if my clients are going to trust me with the things that they're asking me to help them with, then I'm only going to take them on if I trust them a little bit too. That's one of the ways that I show that I trust them.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing that. I know for me, that has been difficult to try and find that balance between sort of setting boundaries to make sure that you are paid, but also having the flexibility and compassion to help people who don't necessarily have the ability to put up money, or even if they do, that is a large chunk of money that could be used to support other areas of their life instead of sitting in a lawyer's trust fund account. So thank you so much for sharing the way that you do it. And I really appreciate hearing all of your tips today. But we always like to end our episode with the same question, which is, what is something new you've learned recently?
Oh, what's something new I've learned recently? I think one of the things that it's been a bit of a reminder to me, rather than something that I've learned, is when you throw something out there into the world and hope that it's going to work more often than not, but it's never going to work if you don't throw it out there. That's the approach with the Lawyer Incubator. And I've been so, humbled by the response that I've got to it, that it really was that that reminder that if you believe in something and you've worked really hard at it, if you leap, there will probably be a net. Either that, or you're going to figure out how to grow wings on the way down.
That is such an amazing reminder and such a poignant piece of advice. Thank you so much for sharing, Ashley. And thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing this conversation. It's been so fun chatting with you. For anyone who wants to keep up with all of Ashley's exciting projects, we've linked them in the episode notes. And to stay up to date with the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode coming next Tuesday.
Bye.